You are listening to the cycling podcast, A De Vuelta a España, in association with Rafa, the fastest clothing in the world tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with Rafa in 2019 as they partner EF Education First and Kenyon's Run. Stage 1. Today we are in Torrevieja.
It's been a lovely day here. And, well, somebody else who will think it's been a lovely day in Malaga is Rowan Dennis. The one thing I would fear for Dennis is that the man on his shoulder is Kwiatkowski, who, of course, is good on little short, sharp finishes. So, who knows? There could be a bit of a battle over the coming days for the leader's jersey. What looked for a while a very promising move. He had the wind behind him, which was obviously helping, but in the end he couldn't hold off Michał Kwiatkowski and Alejandro Valverde. Kwiatkowski of Sky ended the day in the red jersey, but it was Valverde who won the stage, his 10th Vuelta stage win.
Talking of water, Lionel, I see you're enjoying a Neste there. I was hoping to talk about lager this evening.
Really? We had the Alhambra last night, which was very nice.
Well, I'm glad to say, I think I'm right in saying, you'll have to check this with Fran, that we're moving out of San Miguel territory.
In our car on this battle, we're playing a great game, Decathlon versus Osborne Ball. We set ourselves a challenge in our car to spot as many Osborne Balls as possible and spot as many branches of Decathlon. And at the moment it's 2-2, but the Decathlons are going to increase in number when we go up north. The Osborne Balls are going to decrease in number, so Decathlon, I think, are going to have a strong second half of the Vuelta.
What about Rudy Moller in the red jersey and Team Sky's chase?
I was made to look like a bit of an idiot when I put it to Theo Gegenhardt, friend of the podcast, gap year student extraordinaire.
This is my virtual and metaphorical Madrid, because it's my last day on the Vuelta. Going home tomorrow, handing over Madison Handsling style to the Buffalo. In fact, if you hear, you can just about hear the hooves in the distance, and that isn't the Osborne Bulls from Andalusia, that is the Buffalo.
Now, by the way, 4-2 the score. Osborne Bull beating Decathlon.
It was Genies who opened the sprint first, and that was the right thing to do because it was incredibly narrow. I mean, we were talking about this stage as potentially a bunch sprint, which was ludicrous, but it would have been ludicrous had there been a bigger group than that there. It was pretty chaotic, and the incident beyond the finish line really was a direct result of the narrowness of it, because the photographers were there. There wasn't a lot of space, was there?
Imagine what would have happened if a peloton had come in for a bunch sprint there.
Well, it doesn't bear thinking about. And again, it was one of those days where the road book said 2,910 meters of vertical gain. Actually, more like 3,500 meters of vertical gain, apparently. And in the end, there was one clinical attack by Simon Yates that won him the stage. So he is back in the red jersey of race leader.
A really intriguing one, because it was at the equivalent point of the Giro d'Italia that Simon Yates, of course, the race leader, collapsed so spectacularly, lost an hour and 15 minutes over 2 days. So really everybody's looking for clues with such a small lead over Alejandro Valverde. Quintana had a shocker. He had puncture, he had changed bikes, and Valverde ran out of legs as well near the top. So Quintana and Valverde really struggled in, while Yates increased his lead from 25 seconds to a pretty healthy looking 1:38, and he stands on the edge of winning the Vuelta.
It meant that overall Simon Yates is the winner, Enric Mas second at 1:46, Miguel Ángel López third at 2:04.
That's a reminder of last year's Vuelta a España, won by Britain's Simon Yates, ahead of Enric Mas and Miguel Ángel López. Neither Yates nor Mas are riding this year, but López is, as are six of the other riders who finished in last year's top 10. Welcome to the Costa Blanca. My name is Lionel Burney, and this is the first episode of our nightly coverage from the Vuelta a España. And, it's slightly unusual this evening in that, unlike the race, which was a team time trial, this is very much a solo effort. Normal service will be resumed tomorrow. But there's no Richard Moore today because he is attending a wedding. He'll be back tomorrow, so don't switch off just yet. Throughout the race, we'll also be hearing regularly from Daniel Freeb and from Orla Chenoui. and hopefully we'll catch up with Fran Reyes too. Now, I know some listeners are disappointed that Fran can't join us regularly this year, but he's got a job working with the race organisers, and so he is unavailable for selection on quite the same basis. But throughout the race, we'll be hearing from two riders who are going to be keeping an audio diary for us. More about that a little bit later on. So, where am I? Well, I'm outside a busy bar on the Costa Blanca. Is there any other kind in late August? It's just gone 10 o'clock. The karaoke is turning up a notch. There's an Indian restaurant just above my head here where we will probably end up having dinner a little bit later on. We're a short drive away from Torre Vieja, where the team time trial was held this evening, and the chalkboard behind me offers steak pies, Cornish pasties and sausage rolls. There's no time for that now. There's a stage to digest.
The fastest clothing in the world tour. The home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with Ratha in 2019 as they partner EF Education First and Canyon SRAM.
Thank you very much to Rafa for sponsoring the cycling podcast. We're grateful for their support because it enables us to be here covering the three Grand Tours. As with the Giro and the Tour de France, we'll be awarding our prestigious Pedaleur de Charme t-shirt to one rider each week. And it's up to you, our listeners, to nominate and vote for the riders you think are most worthy. So later in the week, we'll be asking for nominations on Twitter and Facebook. So if you see any really charming behaviour when watching the race on TV, make sure you let us know. If you'd like to buy anything from Rafa's Pedaleur de Charme range, we have jerseys and t-shirts with the slogan Pedaleur and Pedaleurs de Charme, plus cycling podcast caps. Go to rafa.cc and search for Pedaleur de Charme to find the whole range. I think there's a bit of a Rafa sale on at the moment, so you may get a few pounds off. So the 2019 Vuelta kicked off with a 13.4-kilometre team time trial from the salt flats of Salinas de Torrevieja to Torrevieja itself. The start ramp was actually carved out of a mound of salt. The stage began right down by a salt processing plant, a big factory, lots of bags of salt stacked up outside. On the first glance, not the most beautiful place to start a Grand Tour, but the actual lagoons themselves were really quite striking. At one of them, the biggest of the two lakes where they dredge and store the salt, is a not unattractive pink colour, although slightly disconcerting to see the water turn pink. And apparently it's pink because there's a bacteria that flourishes in extremely salty water. Anyway, that's where the race started. The riders went through a little salt archway as they got down to the start ramp. And, well, the course itself was supposed to be fairly straightforward. It's become very common for the Vuelta to start with a team time trial. Since 2010, the race has had one on the opening day on every occasion except last year. And the winners in that time have been BMC twice, Movistar twice, HTC Colombia, Leopard Trek, Astana and Sky. So what makes a good team time trial effort and separates a successful ride from an unsuccessful ride? Well, who better to ask than Italy's former time trial champion Marco Pinotti, who's masterminded several of BMC's team time trial victories, including their world title in Richmond in 2015, as well as victories in the Tour de France and the Vuelta. As a rider, of course, Pinotti also excelled in the team time trials and led HTC Colombia over the line first at the 2011 Giro to take the pink jersey. These days, he's CCC's team time trial coach, well, their time trial coach, actually, and he's here working with a relatively inexperienced group, including several Grand Tour debutants, Nathan van Hooijdonk, Will Barter, Simon Sajnok, Jonas Kok and Pavel Bernas. Now, Barter said after the race that this was only the second team time trial he'd ridden as a professional. Anyway, here's Marco Pinotti on the art of team time trialing. What is it about team time trialing?
Yeah, because everybody, when you win, it's everybody enjoy, and it's not about individual. This is the epitome of the team sport, and then it's the peak is it brings together the whole team, and it's you can plan very precisely, and it's takes quite a lot of preparation, and not only talent. You can make up sometimes with preparation what you're missing with talent. Yeah.
And what makes a good team time trial, and what are the mistakes that riders can make?
Yeah, you have to start with a big engine, if not two. But having a big engine or it can be the bigger, it can bring to bigger mistakes, because if it's not able to to manage his strength and not able to use this the strength to the help of the team, he can disrupt the team. You know, the basic assembly was with Cancellara. You know, he was the biggest in G probably in his ages, but was never part of a big team time trial, as far as I remember.
So in terms of this course today, is it what kind of team time trial is it?
Yeah, this is like a short lead out, no, like a long lead out. So I think the best team are the one that are able to lead the team out in the sprint in the final kilometer, like Quick Step. So these are those type of riders. It's very short for any team time trial.
You're working with a younger group, a less experienced group. What are the things you're trying to teach them at this stage?
The more thing we do is practicing, and I want to push them to their limits so they do mistakes and they understand how to be, not to repeat the mistakes.
Yeah. And lastly, when you're doing the planning, how much detail goes into that? Do you decide in advance the order the riders will go in?
Yeah, if I know as much detail as I can, because I said when you plan everything, especially when you give a rider an order, 99% of the time he does it. So sometimes the rider, they underperform where they don't have a clear role or a clear, when you give them, you have to be there, pull from here to there. Most of the time they do it.
And lastly, what would be a good result for CCC today?
I think top 10 would be a good result, yeah.
Del día de hoy, así suenan los aplausos, así tenemos que llevar en volandas al mejor equipo, el equipo Astana ganaba desde la primera etapa de la Vuelta. Con Miguel Ángel López, Manuel Eboaro, Dario Cataldo, Johnny Izaguirre, Borja Izaguirre, con Omar Fraile, Jaco Fulsan y Luis León Sánchez, mejor equipo de la etapa, el equipo Astana, un aplauso de todos nosotros.
So let's recap what happened in the tail of the etapa. It was a pretty eventful stage in the end. We heard just then from Marco Pinotti, who said he thought that a top 10 position for CCC would be a good result. They were the first team to set a serious benchmark, really, and eventually finished in sixth position. So they'll be pretty pleased with that. EF Education First were the team to knock them off the top of the leaderboard, and they stayed in front a short while until Sunweb went 2 seconds faster than them. It wasn't long before the all-powerful Astana team beat them, and the Colombian Miguel Angel Lopez led them over the line. He was third, remember, in both the Giro and the Vuelta last year, and although he had a slightly disappointing Giro this season, he has to be one of the top favourites for overall victory in this Vuelta. De Koenig Quickstep pushed them very close, but they had a bit of a wobble around the last corner and finished a couple of seconds outside Astana's time. De Koenig Quickstep also had to dodge a Jumbo-Visma team car, which had stopped to sort out the aftermath of their crash. Jumbo-Visma really had the worst day of all the teams because they fell en masse on a left-hand bend midway through the race. They've got two of the strong favourites for the overall here, Primoz Roglic and Steven Kruiswijk. Kruiswijk, of course, was on the podium at the Tour de France last month. They brought a very strong team here, but it really wasn't their day. They'd already lost Sepp Kuss in the first kilometre when he suffered a mechanical, and then all bar George Bennett, Robert Hesink and Tony Martin came down, and it meant that they finished 18th out of the 22 teams, losing 40 seconds to Astana. Roglic didn't look too bad at finish. Pretty scuffed up, or at least his skin suit was, so possibly an uncomfortable night's sleep for him. They weren't the only fallers. Fernando Gaviria of UAE Team Emirates also came down, and he's had some really unpleasant road rash on his hip and his shoulders. So what looked like a relatively safe, benign course on paper actually turned out to be a lot trickier. Let's hear from Jumbo-Visma's Tony Martin about their crash.
Yeah, there was a wet part. Before a roundabout, was absolutely unexpected. I don't know if somebody put there some water, what actually happened. It wasn't there in the recon, so it was completely unexpected. The tires were wet and the first guys slipped away in the corner.
Martin wasn't the only rider to talk about unexpected patches of water on the course, which was a bit strange because it's been 30 degrees plus all day and it hasn't even cooled down now, so quite where that water came from, no one is particularly sure. You may have seen on the internet one of the team car from the Euskadi Basque Country team overshooting a corner during their recon of the course earlier on in the afternoon. Quite dramatic pictures, but that wasn't where the Jumbo-Visma crash took place. So there's nothing to link those two incidents at all. Anyway, Jumbo-Visma has lost 40 seconds, which gives Roglic and Kruiswijk a bit of ground to make up already. And Lopez is in the red jersey. It's the first time he's led a Grand Tour, and quite a statement of intent from Astana to put him in the lead so early on. Have to talk to Daniel about that tomorrow to find out why they decided to do that, because normally they would keep the main GC rider out of the spotlight so early on in the race and perhaps give one of the lesser lights a chance to enjoy a day in the red jersey. The rhetorical question of the day is whether Lopez can lead the Vuelta from start to finish, as Freddie Martins did in 1977. I'm not being serious, of course. He's not going to lead from start to finish, is he? What about Movistar then? Well, they were shocked a few days before the race by the withdrawal of Richard Carapaz, the Giro champion, who is off to Ineos next year. He rode a Criterium in the Netherlands on Sunday, apparently without his team's knowledge, and he crashed in that race, injuring his shoulder, ruling him out of the race. It does simplify Movistar's GC situation a bit and makes Nairo Quintana, a former winner of the Vuelta, of course, their most obvious leader. They had a reasonable day. They were seventh, 16 seconds behind Astana.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport. Fueled by science.
Thank you very much to Science in Sport for sponsoring the Cycling Podcast. As ever, you can get 25% off all of their products by going to scienceinsport.com, and when you reach the checkout, entering the code SISCP25. Had a few messages on Twitter asking what's happened to the robot voice. I feel a bit self-conscious doing the robot voice on my own, but the robot will return at in a future episode. Somebody also asked whether I would do the robot voice in our upcoming tour of theatre dates in November, and said that he would buy tickets for the Bristol event if I promised to do the robot arm movements, which Richard talks about. You obviously can't see those in a podcast, but I make an arm movement when doing the robot voice. But yes, I will do that on stage in Bristol if you buy a couple of tickets. Anyway, Science in Sport are giving away a Team Ineos Pinarello Dogma F12 bike, and you have a chance of winning if you sign up on their website. You enter the competition by going to scienceinsport.com. The Pinarello Dogma F12 competition is really prominent on the Science in Sport website front page, so you'll find it there. Sign up and enter. We'll hear a fair bit over the course of the Giro about Science in Sport's new Plant 20 vegan range as well. But until then, the code is SISCP25 for 25% off. Before we hear from our two Vuelta diarists, you may know that another batch of Stacey Snyder's incredibly popular mugs went on sale a bit earlier today, and they sold out in minutes again. The two good causes we've chosen to support through the sale of the mugs this time are the Bike Project, which was nominated by Stephen Tunstall. Now, the Bike Project is a project that collects old and unwanted bikes, fixes them up and donates them to refugees. And Stephen is a volunteer bike buddy with the charity, and he accompanies refugees after they receive a bike to help them build up a bit of confidence riding on the roads. When we told Stephen that sales of the mug would benefit the Bike Project, he said, "It's a smallish charity, so donations like this will have a really big impact. I recall a recent Kilometre Zero about a refugee who turned pro. In fact, this was in one of our Giro episodes. It was an interview with Awet Gebremedin, an Eritrean rider who now lives in Sweden and rides for the Israel Cycling Academy. So this is not as far removed from the pro ranks as it might appear, and many of his countrymen are beneficiaries of the charity." The second good cause is Andy's Man Club, nominated by Garrett Turley in memory of his friend and cycling buddy Peter Hanlon, who took his own life after years of mental health issues. Garrett wrote us a very moving letter about his friend and why he supports the work of Andy's Man Club, which is a national charity providing a network of free drop-ins aimed at helping men to talk about their mental health and open up about what they might be going through. When we told Garrett that his nomination would benefit from sales of Stacey's mugs, he replied to say, "I will match whatever Stacey's hard work brings in." And that's absolutely fantastic. So two great causes being supported by the sale of Stacey Snyder's brilliant mugs, and another batch of the Vuelta edition mugs will go on sale later on in the race. Now, before the Vuelta began, we asked a couple of riders from the peloton to keep an audio diary for us, and they recorded their first thoughts a few hours before the start of the stage.
G'day to all the cycling podcast listeners. My name's Nick Schultz, and I'm a rider with Mitchelton Scott. I'm an Australian rider, and I came to the team from a Spanish team, Cajaral, and this is my first year within the team. Here we are at the start of the Vuelta, and I've been brought on to try and help the GC ambitions of the team with Esteban Chavez here. Recently, my build-up has entailed being at the Tour of Poland, which was 2 weeks ago, and before that I was at an altitude training camp in Font-Romeu with about 10 riders from the team and quite a few staff, where we got in a lot of good preparation.
Hi everyone, it's James Knox speaking of De Gunning Quickstep. I'm going to be doing a bit of a diary here at the during La Vuelta for hopefully the next 3 weeks. Hopefully I'm here for the whole 3 weeks.
Here at the race, I'll be rooming with Mikel Nieve, one of the more senior and most experienced riders on our team. It's also nice as Mikel is Spanish and we can have some Spanish conversations, which is nice for him and me, to sort of keep on top of my Spanish that I learned at Cajaral.
Yeah, just got my feet up ahead of the TTT in about an hour. Been watching some of the first teams roll out. After doing a recon as well, it's a bit of a tricky circuit, so we'll see how it goes. Hopefully we stay nice and organised and it all goes to plan. But yeah, it won't be easy. Definitely going to hurt a lot, so we'll see.
Tonight, things kick off with the Triple T, an event that makes most riders in the peloton pretty nervous, I would imagine. It's something that is super technical, super hard, and just generally high stress all round. It's a very late start. We're not off until 20 to 8, so it makes the day really long. I haven't opted to do any sort of a ride or spin this morning. My philosophy is we're about to get stuck into 3 weeks of racing, so I'll spend as little time on the saddle as possible this morning and just do the recon of the course when we get there at around 4 o'clock. This afternoon we'll do a couple of laps and have a look and get a feel for it and go through our pre-distinguished order and see how it feels, as the course is quite technical and hilly.
For this next 3 weeks, we've got Fabio Jakobsen for the sprints in the team, we have Phil and Stevie preparing for Worlds and hopefully going to try and get up there in some of the punchy finishes. And for myself, really, I've got a bit of a free roll. I'm going to have a little bit of a dabble with GC, maybe just see how it goes to the first rest day. No major stress, and then from there make a decision whether to start losing time and go for breakaways or to try and hang in for a possible good ride. We'll see how it goes, but it's all still new for me and I'm still young, so yeah, I'm going to try and learn as much as possible. And yeah, the main ambition is actually just to finish it, because I didn't manage to finish the Giro, and it'd be a great way to finish a good season with 3 weeks of racing on my belt here.
We start our warm-up probably about 40 minutes before the race. So that's what my day is going to entail today, and I'll be checking in each day with a little update. Cheers.
After the team time trial, both James and Nick phoned in dispatches to let us know how they got on.
So that's day one done. It was a hot and fast affair out there from our team's perspective. We kept it together quite well and didn't lose too much time, limited our losses to the winning teams, and had a reasonably smooth ride. So it was all good on that front.
Okay, so we're just driving back from the TTT. Oh, I think we're all a little bit disappointed with how it finished, even though the performance was good. Second place by only a few seconds, and well, it was a mess with some water on some corners, and then the Visma car on the exit of another corner because of the guys who crashed. I'm not sure why it was parked there, maybe not really with thinking about the guys coming behind. So in the end, it was a bit of a mess. We had the last few kilometers guys everywhere trying to close gaps, and yeah, even myself, I'm a bit annoyed. I came into a couple of corners a bit too fast when I was on the front, and yeah, it wasn't the smartest, but no, I think it was a good effort, and pleased how strong everyone was. But yeah, just hard to take when you're second. Didn't think I'd be in with a chance of winning a Grand Tour stage on a TTT. So yeah, taking everything into account, a good start. But disappointing to come so close to the victory.
After the stage, instead of cooling down on the home trainer, we just got on our road bikes and rode back to the hotel. It was about, I think, 18 or 19 kilometres, just to roll the legs over, as tomorrow is quite a difficult start. We've got 20k uphill from the get-go, so it could be quite brutal. This evening's plans are to basically now just have a shower, go and have some food, and actually skip massage tonight. It's already quite late. It's nearly 9:30, and we'll be looking to just maximise our sleep and recovery before tomorrow. Yeah, so hopefully it's a good one. Cheers.
And then, yeah, just to add that, I think quite a few of the guys from Lotto Visma and some of the teams crash as well, so I hope everyone's okay. It was a bit of a, yeah, it was a mess. So, yeah, I hope no one's too badly injured.
Well, we'll be hearing more from James Knox and Nick Schultz as they send in their audio diaries during the Vuelta. We've done rider diaries from races before, often editing them into whole episodes, but this is the first time we've asked anyone to keep a diary on a sort of ongoing basis. So we'll see how it turns out. And a bit later on in the race, we'll be asking you, the listeners, if there's any questions you'd like us to put to James and Nick. We'll give you the opportunity to ask them some questions. Well, that is about it for this episode, the opening episode of our Vuelta coverage. It's well gone 10 p.m. now. I need to get something to eat. It's been a long day for me. I was on the 6:45 flight this morning from London Luton to Alicante with all the holiday makers. I'll get in quick and before Richard does and say I didn't bring my bucket and spade, but I have brought a sun hat and some shorts. Very warm weather here in Spain, as it always is for the Vuelta. And, well, let's hope that the racing is hot over this next week. I'll be back tomorrow. We'll be hearing from Richard Moore. We'll be hearing from our two diarists. And hopefully we'll also catch up with Daniel Freeve. So until then, thank you very much for listening. Yeah.